This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, and we try to alternate between weightier political and economic issues and, I don't want to say lighter, but comparatively different topics, the arts, sometimes even food, cultural life of this or other countries. And sometimes we try to draw them together. That sounds a little bit vague, but my guest, James Lobo, who is the artistic director at the Joburg Theaters, all three of them, loves to cook, is a strong proponent of doing serious, interesting, and adventuresome theater, and he's not afraid of the political implications of theater. So I think I managed to draw all three of those skeins together all at once. James is a pretty busy guy. He's been traveling around the world, but he's back in Johannesburg for a bit, and we snared him for a conversation this morning. Let me put it this way. James, he likes to say sometimes with friends that he's just a Zulu boy from the country who discovered a love for theater, moved to Johannesburg, and eventually became artistic director at the Market Theater, and then moved to his current perch at the Joburg Theaters, where he is artistic director there for three different, very different theaters and different audiences, different vibes, and all the rest. James, welcome.
Thank you so much, Brooks. Compliments of the season.
Oh, yeah, because this is actually the first time we've seen you since last year. So I guess we're still allowed to do that. We were chatting just before we started. I pulled up a photograph of him with another actor, Russell Savadir. The two of them were performing in 1998 at the what was then still called the Civic Theater, now the Joburg Theater, in the Samuel Beckett play, Waiting for Godot. Forget who was who and who was the other guy.
I played Estragon, and he was Vladimir, and Christopher Kindo played Lucky, and André Jacques van der Merwe played Porto.
And who directed?
Madeleine van Rennen.
Okay, yeah. So that was a strong cast. It was a strong project.
Yeah, long time ago.
That's a hard work to get your hands around sometimes.
Yo, it's just one of those plays that gives an actor an unbelievable discipline, because you have to adhere to what Beckett wrote. Even the stage directions can't be changed because they're completely orchestrated and interwoven into his words. So it was amazing to do that piece.
Yeah, and every single word there, every single gesture meant something to Beckett. You weren't allowed to sort of almost kind of deliver the line.
One of my favorite lines in the play that Vladimir says after listening to Porto, and he says, "We have time to grow old."
Yeah, but we grow older faster than we used to. That's the problem.
Yeah.
James got a little touch of gray in his beard, too, just like me.
So. I'm gone now.
The reason why I wanted to talk to James today, not simply because he's been in his current incarnation for about a year now, a year and a little bit, you're about to start rehearsals, I think, on a work which is a particularly interesting work, but for me, just ever so slightly puzzling as to why you picked it. And this, of course, is for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow is enough by Entozake Shange. And she originally had her name, but picked that name in her desire to connect with African roots. And the play, I was startled to realize the play is a half century old.
Yeah.
50 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
Got its first trial run in Berkeley, California in 1974. I tend to think of this play as sort of like it came over, it showed up last week.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden I realize it's well into late middle age.
Yeah, and all of that you just said goes into my answer also for the question you've just posed as to why have we picked it up. First of all, you heard that it was on Broadway last year.
Yes,
it was revival. A revival of it on Broadway. But the thing about it, Brooks, is that when you read these testimonials of these women and the biggest hurdles they deal with in life and challenges that they are faced. And I remember I read a thing where somebody said, great as it is, this play, but it doesn't paint a great picture of black men, because all of them are dealing with relationships, with hard people in their lives, with a love they've articulated for somebody, but that person never reciprocate the love, and so there is, my answer to you is, you read it, it just feels like she was commissioned 4 months ago to write this piece. There is nothing that is period about it.
Let's set the stage a little bit metaphorically. It's in its concept, it's seven women who don't get character names. They're Lady in Blue and Lady in Red, Lady in Yellow, Lady in White, and so forth. And they read or they deliver consecutive monologues. Mm. And so the characters don't interconnect on a personal basis, but they interconnect
The Lady in Red, yes.
But they interconnect thematic one to the next And the writer called her work a work of choreopoem, choreopoetics. That brings me to a question about it. I mean, what, something that intrigues me. A lot of the language, the rhetoric, the use of the language is very colloquially American, very Black American in its style. Mm. Is that easily carry overable to here? Will audiences be able to catch the rhythms of this?
This being my 10th production, I did 9 in the market, and this is my first one at the Joburg Theatre. I've worked out that then these amazing wordsmiths that write these characters that are inspired by the colloquial language from the communities they come from, they weave them so well and beautifully together. And there is something also about that culture and that language that people from anywhere in the world understand. And I'm yet to meet audiences who have struggled to understand language from the States. And so that is, one never stresses about that at all. And then one of the things also that I've always done in all 10 productions, I have always had an African-American person in the room working with me. And this time around, I've got Yawande James. Mm-hmm. And what Yawande is going to do, she's met all the actors and they all have a beautiful American accent. And what she's going to do now, she's going to work and put on regional work. So Yawande did 5 shows with me at the market, and I brought her in at the Joburg Theatre to work on Fences, and she's working on this one.
You say American accents, but there are very different American accents.
But this is what I'm saying, that these characters, one is from St. Louis and one is from San Francisco. And so her work that is doing is to make those actors work in the regional accents so that they can't sound the same, these 7 girls. They can't. If they do, you're fighting against the originality of the characters. And Yawande is somebody, really had an amazing time working with her on these productions.
We need to explain something else, and I want you to try to explore this. The very title of this work, for many South Africans, might be problematic.
Yeah.
Because just to call the work For Colored Girl already is sending a whole series of signals to people in this country that is not what the playwright intended at all.
Yeah, no. That for me, again, is an exciting thing, because apparently on social media, there's been that conversation about the term colored and the context of the term from the idea of different countries. And even the word suicide at a time when it's actually quite heavy in South Africa. You know, I think it was Tyler Perry, when he did it, he called it For Colored Girls.
Yeah.
You know,
I've seen a poster like that.
Yeah. Because it's just not only in South Africa, all over the world. And sometimes people just go, oh. But the most beautiful thing about this piece is that you read this title and it comes across as negative. But what is amazing, and what Ntozake did very well, when you watch this piece, you read the piece, you watch the piece, you realize that all these women are victims. The fact that they're able to stand and talk about the storms they've been through. So she has written about how tenacious these women are. And I've always said I'm one of those blessed boys in the world. I've got six sisters. I grew up with six.
You can practically do this play in your living room.
Yeah, exactly. With an original aunt there playing somewhere.
Okay, I'm just dragging the family members. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And they will do cameos. Yeah. And, you know, but it's in awe how I've seen my own sisters going through things and up until they tell you, you'll never know. And so this is the most beautiful thing about that. These are not defeated women.
I was going to say that they survive. Like the song goes, "I will survive."
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick ad break, and then we'll be right back in our conversation with James Obo of the Joburg Theaters, artistic director there, and Brooke Spector. And this is The Deep Dive.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And this is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector. My guest is James Obo, actor, director, artistic director of the Joburg Theaters, and about to launch with an American play in its 50th year, which, again, I can't say it enough, startles me to death, because I figured this, the texture of it is contemporary, not looking back a half century. And that, of course, is the play Four Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide, When the Rainbow Is Enough. And just before our break, you were saying the key to the play is that they may have thought about death. But in the end, they chose life.
They transcended whatever that they were going through that time. And that is why they're able to share these testimonials of the whirlwind they've gone through. That meant that anything positive that they had that was innate in them died at that time. And then it's the beauty of them. And she's and for those that love music and how a composer will write music with different movements, she's done an amazing thing. All of these characters, you see them, she plays with time in a very beautiful way. Get like the speed of that character, and it ends, and another character comes in, and the second movement of that character comes in, and by the time the third movement of the character comes, you then realize she's exploring the idea that in us, we're not one person. And the things that we experience in different moments and with different people around us means that we there are certainly different sparks that of that. I mean, the character of Lady in Blue, she's a young young lady wanting to be accepted, and she's half Puerto Rican and half African, and she's got this guy that she goes out with, and when she's with him, she plays the Puerto Rican thing. She gets taken to go and watch Willie Colon, and he didn't perform that night, and the relationship happens with that guy. It goes completely pear-shaped. The next time you meet her, she's got a beautiful monologue that starts with, "I used to live in the world, now I live in Harlem." And she is somebody who has gone and explored the world, and she's come back to these projects that were designed to stifle anything positive or anything that is about growth for it. She talks about Tunis. She talks about Accra. She talks about walking by the seaside and picking up shells. And she said, "My world is Harlem now," which is so symbolic. And then later in the piece, there is this abortion that she goes through, that you're able to link it with the guy. That it's just so amazingly that it's not, the characters are not one person. And she loves to dance. And this is also this thing about the choreo poem that she did, that the release that comes with movement.
I don't want to make light of this, but what you're saying, can we say that it isn't actually seven different characters? It's seven different manifestations of one person.
Of Ndozak. You know, I auditioned and auditioned. I flew to Cape Town, and I asked a very dear friend called Lara Foote for a space at the Baxter. I auditioned and auditioned. Finally, I came up with the cast that we have. And every time I met these ladies who were auditioning for me, I was saying to them, when you read this, you then realize it's all Ndozak Eshang. She's almost taken her life like a class glass and just let it drop. And when a glass does that, you just see it. It's pieces of it everywhere. And the other parts that are not maybe her experiences are stuff that she interacted with in life, and she morphed it into a life that is in the play.
It's not quite autobiographical,
but yeah,
it's metaphorically.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But are South African audiences going to take this on board? The title is problematic for some people. Suicide is something of a social taboo to talk about. It's foreign. What are local people going to see with this? Now, I pause that question for a second because I remember in the show The Color Purple, right at the end, when Celie is about to think about taking her former tormentor and husband back, I'm sitting in the audience, and one of the women in the audience, place is filled, stands up and shouts back at the stage, "Don't you dare."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like the Proscenium Arch has vanished. She's the woman in the audience has just joined the cast.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Brooks, you know, one of the things I've shared with you so many times is just that I've always just like am taken with a lot of humility and appreciation is the blessing that I've been able to make theater in a lot of countries around the world. And I can tell you right now, we have some of the most adventurous audiences in the world in this country. Our audiences, we are just a country that is curious about the world. And I've gone to places where I've been disappointed by how sometimes people are just so limited in their appreciation of things. Big country, you know, and so South Africans, they are definitely going to be walking a long mile with us on this journey of this peace and understand it. And I think we also, in terms of resilience of women, we have some of the best women in terms of resilience. We've gone through a lot of stuff and are still going through a lot of stuff. So this piece suddenly becomes an exciting echo for audiences. Audiences sit there and go, that could be my grandmother's life when she was young. I saw my mother go through this when daddy disappeared and he will pop up every 3 years and they'll have a fight and you'll be gone. And so there is a lot. And what I'm doing now for me as a director is to not look at this piece as a period piece. My approach of it is completely contemporary.
You just preempted my next question. Yeah. I was going to ask you, in its style, at least in the version that I have seen, and there's a film version of it as well.
Yeah, which is adapted also by Tyler Perry,
It's very much of the idiom, style, and texture of the 70s in the United States, in the end of the Vietnam War protests, sort of the winding down of the civil rights movement in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s, and the rise at the same time now, a contemporary version of feminism, all these movements, and this play sits on top of that. You're telling me that you're going to place it in a contemporary style, idiom, and circumstance. Because, just as you said, audience members, that could be my mother. It could be my sister. I have a friend like that. Is it hard to do that? Is it hard to drag something from one time and put it somewhere else?
I can tell it's not easy. Definitely, it is not easy.
I've seen lots of things like Shakespeare done in the style of, Little Italy in New York. Little startled what's going on stage.
Yeah, with mozzarella everywhere, It's not easy, Brooks, and it needs also a director with a lot of humility. You need, because what you're doing, you are not helping the playwright. I'm not helping Dozaki at all, but I'm wanting to take what she has gifted us with and place it in this contemporary landscape that we add, and create things around it that makes the contemporary eye and the contemporary ear vibe with it. So that's I've been working with, I've got two musical directors. I've got a young guy who's just like a great jazz pianist, and I've got a hip hop cat, and we've worked on music that fuses these two.
Okay, because hip hop didn't really exist when this play was born.
It was just on its way with the Run DMC. It was in Minneapolis. You know, it started popping up Run DMC and Niggas with Attitude, where those bands and the Last Poets. But you're right. You know, it was just on its way. Right. But that is the joy of these things that how music has evolved. Because if you listen to hip hop and it has inherited a lot from Africa. It is and people even talk about the iambic, Shakespeare's iambic that is in hip hop, and a very strong sense of West Africa also that is in it. So I've put these two together, and we creating moods and interludes of music, and also just looking at women who are writing songs today that were inspired by the women that were writing songs when Dozake was writing her plays. So Dozake's era, it's got Nina Simone, it's got Sarah Vaughan, and it's got Aretha popping up. And so we've looked at Michelle Ndiabocello, Cassandra Wilson.
We're going to take a break. James Obo, the high priest of African iambic, it seems. This is the Deep Dive on Bruce Spector. And we'll be back after the station break in a minute.
This is the Deep Dive with Bruce Spector.
This is the Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, and my guest today is James Obo of Joburg Theaters, artistic director there, formerly with the Market Theater, an old friend. And he is, and the reason why we're talking with him, or at least the precise reason, is because he has a new production of what is becoming a classic work. Mm. There we go. That's probably better. Ntozake Shange's For Color Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough. This opens at the Joburg Theater in mid-February. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. And also, we are also even away picking up Black History Month.
I was going to ask, was that accidental or planned?
Yeah. No, it's planned.
Okay.
You know, I'll tell you what was accidental. When I said to the team, let's get the rights, I want to do this piece. What I didn't know, Brooks, is that it's a set work for high school.
Here?
Yeah.
Here.
It is a set way for high schools. Really? We're getting a lot of schools buying tickets, a lot of schools. And I really take my hat off to people who sit in the room and put a basket together of works that would be prescribed works for young people. Because to be in matric or grade 12 and be given this gift, it's giving a passport at the to young people about the world. And it is important that when we choose and prescribe works, we are not myopic and just choose South African works only. And you know, and we need to say to young people, this is the universality of writing. And so I was actually told by one team member the other day and just said the schools are packing up the shows. And also the other thing that I'm doing with it, Brooks, we are establishing as Joburg City Theatres a new venue and at the Joburg Theatre. It's going to play at the Nelson Mandela on stage. And we're going to get even to a point where we're going to give this venue a name. It's, you know, I'm doing it in a round, in a thrust with three sides, which is practically playing in a round to an audience of 450 on that stage.
I was wondering, because that particular theater, seating close to 1,100 seats, can be very distancing for a work that is primarily spoken.
Yeah. I said, you are so right. I sat with the team with Exco last year after our beautiful production of Fences. And I said to them, we should never, ever put on a dramatic work in the theater again. And Sarah Roberts did a beautiful job of pulling the stage forward and bringing the set forward. But it's not designed for dramatic works. It's designed for spectacles. And so I've now found a way of making sure that we can program or curate and dramatic works in the theater, but use the theater differently. And also, Brooks, you know, and in all your years of watching theater in this country and overseas, it's lovely to go to a venue and experience it differently.
Yeah,
venue you know very well and just, you know,
to
can
see
reach
some fresh eyes, yeah. A different kind of version. Yeah. I mean, last year, William Kentry work did something very different in the same theater, essentially backstage, seating maybe 200 people, I think. And it was the whole length of the backstage and what, maybe 10 meters deep.
Yeah. And Kentridge really made us as an audience experience being in the trenches.
You know what I mean?
And it's like it was, and everybody who came to see it, they said, oh my God, one of the best things I've ever seen in my life, uncomfortable sitting. And, you know, and which is a success of what you're planning to do. So this new space that we're establishing on the stage will allow us to do a beautiful two pianos and classical music, will allow us to do and even allow the Joburg ballet to do intimate works of ballet of contemporary dance and whatever. And so we're gonna have a thing at the theater and ask the staff and make a clarion call out there to get audiences to come up with a name.
Yeah, no, I have always thought that for much of what I have seen in theater, an audience which is somewhere between 400 and 500 people is right. It's intimate enough that you almost are party to it.
Yeah.
But big enough so that the production is facing a room of people rather than, you know, playing to 10, 15, 20 people.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to park for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow is enough just for a minute. And let's talk about a couple of other things that you're doing or planning to do going forward in the various Joburg theaters, all of them, Soweto, Rudaport, Johannesburg. What else is in store for audiences this year? Because here we are, beginning of 2024, there's going to be other things that you're going to want people to come and buy tickets for and sit there and go, yes, fans.
Yeah. You will remember, Brooks, when I was at the market and when I joined the market in 2013.
Feels like a long time ago.
Yeah, long time ago, yes. I, as artistic director, I produced the first Afrikaans play in 24 years at the market because I called us the Brook Bus, and with Antoinette Kellerman, directed by Martinez Person. And one of the things I got to introduce there was theater done in indigenous languages, which you would know very well. And those are passions of mine. Those are ideas that I work with, you know. And so the Soweto Theater, we are looking really at an idea that we are calling the during the day business. And the Soweto Theater, you know, we're going to be concentrating a lot also on set works at Soweto Theater. But the most beautiful thing is that we've opened a lovely window for ourselves to be the first theater in this country to adapt books written in indigenous languages and stage them and bring young people to come and feast on Sesotho, Sepedi, Setswana, Sezulu, and because what that does for me and Bruce speaks to the business acumen that is very important for theatre, because it blows up the idea of audience in the space. You start getting people who would never go to those theatres because they think those theatres don't speak to me. And so to theatre, we're doing that, and we have a musical that we will be staging around May. And the other thing also that we're doing is, you remember I spoke to you after the naming of the Gibson Kendall Theatre, that I then sat with the team and I said I would like us to establish what we would be known as the Gibson Kendall Annual Lecture. This year we've got Dr. Andile Baba doing it, and I'm going to be directing that with a 3-piece band. You know, Gibson Kendall, his music Gibson himself said it. Gibson was inspired by Art Tatum, by Oscar Peterson, by Duke Ellington. And so we have and you know how these musicians I've just mentioned, Ahmad Jamal, they played with trios. So we have a trio that will be on stage with Dr. Andile Traba and two vocalists, and we'll be looking at Gibson's work. And
Hope you're going to record this.
We're recording everything.
Because
yeah.
You want to establish an archive of
yeah.
the kind of information
yeah.
for people, because so much of this material that's quote unquote anecdotal just sort of disappears.
Yeah. No,
we're going to take another station break, and we're going to continue our conversation with James Bobo of the Joburg City Theaters, the artistic director. We've moved on from For Colored Girls, the next production, to a much broader contemplation of things. We'll be right back after this station break and commercial message.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And this is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and today's guest, James Bobo, artistic director, Joburg City Theaters. We were talking first about a play that he's going to direct. Thank you, Hadida. That's amazing. We get that all the time in this garden. Sorry about that. He's directing a play by Entezake Shange for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow is enough. But we're now talking more broadly about what is being done in other venues under his purview and plans for the rest of the year. And just as we broke for our station ID, we were talking about the annual Gibson Kente lecture that will be more of a production than simply somebody at a podium proclaiming the virtues of X, Y, or Z. Bring us back to that now. Two pianos, a trio.
Yeah, a trio and two female vocalists and Gibson Canvas music. So it's music about and music that inspired by as I was talking about Duke Ellington, that inspired him and Oscar Peterson and Art Tatum. And this year we've invited Dr. Andile Traba, who is doing the lecture, and I'm already in conversation with Professor Puleng Sekgalo, who's at UNISA, to do the lecture next year. My plan really with all of this is to never look at Gibson Kente as a relic from the past, is to say, what is the conversation that Gibson Kente is having with the contemporary tapestry? And there's a lot of young people who are writing their dissertations now on Gibson Kente, and the efficacy, this year I'm calling, I've given it a title, The Efficacy of Gibson Kente's Voice.
There are a lot of people who are writing dissertations on Gibson Kente who have never seen a live performance.
Yeah.
Except perhaps some of the television that he did late in life, because most of his plays, as they traveled around the country into neighboring countries, are from the 60s and early 70s. Some of the people doing these dissertations were still in kindergarten.
Yeah, and it's beautiful that they're citing then papers from other people and what other people were. And that's how somebody carry on living. I mean, you look at what the Germans have done with Brecht. You know, the young people writing dissertations on Brecht died a long time ago, but he left them with a commitment to storytelling that is very visible, that you see all over the world. And these are things we need to learn to do in this country, to look at pioneers of story, of song, of visual arts, and say, how do we and keep these people alive? I take my hat off to Nigeria. Nigeria has done wonders with Fela Kuti. It almost feels like Fela Kuti never died. You know, and Ghana, amazing. Ghana produced what I consider the best book on corruption ever written in Africa by an amazing and prolific writer called Kweyama, who wrote a book called The Beautiful Ones Are Not Yet Born. He wrote fragments, and I'm in the process of adapting one of his books, which is 2,000 Seasons. That is so when you do that, and I keep talking about it, which, that there is a danger with theatre in this country that we keep playing for the same audience. and which means our business acumen around theatre. I mean, I just read a thing now of how, for the first time in 40 years, the RSC has hired two artistic directors.
RSC, pause for a second, yeah. Royal Shakespeare
Company. The Royal Shakespeare Company.
Acronyms are the death of us on radio.
Yes, who are replacing Greg Doran, and the change they're bringing to the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford is absolutely amazing. And when you read on that, they have an obsession with the new audience.
Well, I mean, you don't have a choice in this country in audience terms, because it's honestly enough speaking about it, you have a young audience in the country because the population is young.
It's young, yeah.
They're not many of them well exposed to the idea, let alone the reality of live theater, because they have connected themselves culturally to TV, video,
TikTok,
10 seconds on a TikTok video, and live theater. It's an acquired taste. It takes more than just the, you know, once a year sitting there because someone told you you had to go.
Yeah. And this is sometimes what people will not know about people who run theaters, that behind all the imagination and all the things, the spectacles that get put on, we have sessions where we sit with the board, we sit with the CFO and go through the risk register and look at what is it that will affect our business going forward. How do we go into boardrooms and pitch ideas to? I mean, like, I was talking that one of the most beautiful things that you find in the Joburg City theaters, the Soweto Theater is the only theater in this country that has a youth orchestra. And that is the biggest currency that the theater has. And one of my dearest friends was appointed as the new CEO of the London Symphonia, which is one of the oldest orchestras in Europe, not only in the UK. And this Sunday, I'm sending two people from the Joburg City Theatres. They're going to a conference, a classical music conference in London and Bristol. And we're looking at a collaboration between the Soweto Orchestra and the London Symphonia. Last time I was in London, I've just directed a play in London. I went to the Queen Elizabeth Room in the South Walk and went and watched a beautiful night of aria and the orchestra playing. And so it's just finding a way of how do you constantly surprise your audience and blow up ideas. The Rodeport Theatre is turning 45 this year. We are looking also at, I'm working with Zane Mears. Zane, I've given Zane a piece to direct. And we are staging David Mamet's Oriana at the Joburg Theatre. And
It's a play.
We are staging it. It's in May. And I'm working very close now with Janice Hanneman in choosing what will be the next panto. And we're doing a panto that Janice has never ever made. We've chosen Beauty and the Beast. It's never been adapted into a pantomime. And there's a lot of work that we are doing with the city and collaborations with straight after this meeting, I'm going to meet the Minister of Arts and Culture in Reunion, just up the road here in Parkhurst. And we starting also to speak to people around the BRICS is now producing the artistic bilateral agreements between the BRICS nations, and to start seeing how we can take work to Argentina and invite Argentinian work. And so what we're doing, you change the palette. Egypt, and we're looking. Egypt has got one of the biggest arts festivals in the world that South African theatre companies have never been there. And I'm wanting Joburg City Theatres to be the first ones to go there. I have just delivered keynote address to 45 artistic directors from 30 countries around the world in St. Petersburg, and getting around the idea of how we work together. And so for me, Brooks, you know this space, I'm a guy that I just put my head down and just do the work, you know, and I just believe that's what we have to do, and just get on and do the work. I'm not a guy who's going to be announcing things on social media. I'm not that guy. you know, but I just believe we got to break our backs to make theater exciting, to bring the audiences in. And lastly, I wanted to say the other big thing that we're dealing with in Joburg specifically at the moment is semigration.
Yeah, hold on with that, because that's crucial. We're going to talk about that. We have one last ad break that we have to do. We have to do these things. This is radio.
Yeah. Okay.
You don't do that in theater, but you have to do it in radio. This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, and my special guest today is James Novo of the Joburg City Theaters, the artistic director. And we'll be right back for our wrapping up, and we're going to talk about semigration and emigration in just a minute.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And this is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector. Our special guest, James Povo, artistic director, Joburg City Theaters. And just at the break, I stopped him just as he was about to talk about how theaters intellectually and creatively deal with semigration and immigration of traditional audiences and what one must do thereafter or now in the future, looking forward.
Yeah.
You were going to say something, and I stopped you right at that moment.
Yeah.
Your eyes looked at me like, why?
Yeah.
I said, hold that thought.
So there is a desperate need in this country for, and theaters that are not thinking about that, I don't know what they're thinking about, to create a new audience, because the audience we've had for years and years, and I just take Joburg, because I live in Joburg, and people are moving to Cape Town. And in droves, people are leaving Joburg. They're moving to Cape Town. Yeah, so Cape Town is in a great place as receiving these audiences.
Yes, and it's not just any people. It's people who used to support.
Yeah, yes.
It's the people who would sit there next to you in a theater space.
Yeah. So people are moving to Cape Town. People are moving overseas. And so in life, you need to accept that which you can't change. One can't change that. But the one thing that one can change is to look seriously at how we program and how do we usher in new audiences, new bums on seats.
So tell me, how does one do that? Because this is the central problem for a live stage organization.
So I think what helps us to deal with that, Brooks, it's just the bravery in programming. Because if you are very broad with programming, you start finding work that appeals or has traction to that audience that you're trying to bring to the theater. And so I was making an example to you about Soweto Theater gearing itself to the staging of the works in indigenous language. And you are tapping into an audience that you never knew you had. And so looking at Roodepoort Theatre and a preservation of every beautiful thing that works at Roodepoort Theatre, and then say to yourself, what else can we add here? So that's what it is. It's going to the test room and just throw things and whatever and work with a lot of humility and get to understand that what is it that you need to do next. And so if you ask me, will I be mounting a big Shakespeare anytime soon? The answer is no.
I wasn't going to ask that.
No, I'm just saying, you know, the answer is definitely no. And we're doing David Mamet, which is a beautiful piece, the Oleana piece. And the reason why I've chosen it, it's a relationship between a professor and his favorite student, this amazing relationship that at some point goes completely pear-shaped because they suddenly an accusation of sexual harassment. Yes. That is a universal. You see all the outing of all these great people that you see in the world. So you choose works that are not just for a certain enclave. You choose works that are going to appeal to a wider range of people.
Well, that sounds a lot like Dan Footsie's Disgrace, which was turned into a movie that lots of people loved and a fair number of people were deeply annoyed by.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yes.
Professor-student, imbalanced relationship,
accusations,
and then problems thereafter.
Yeah.
You say David Mamet. Why not Glengarry Glen Ross?
It's too big.
Oh, it's a wonderful play.
I know, but
it's all about the evil in business and
property and
conniving
things.
I mean,
it's amazing.
It's really wicked. It. You know, you're knocked over by it.
I mean, so it's that thing. I've been talking to some business people. We're looking at doing a Mozart's Requiem, but that is not going to be at the Joburg Theatre. It's going to be in one of those mine dumps there, and to celebrate the different and historical pockets of Joburg. We tend to get very stuck in buildings in this country, and we need the way you grow theatre is you take. You program some stuff and take it out of your venues. Theatres in this country are always waiting for people to come to them. And my thinking is we go to the society, we go to the community and find people, tickle their curiosity about the arts sector and bring them in.
Well, you take a work like Mozart's Requiem to a mine dump, awful lot of technology you're going to have to use to make people A, sit there, and B, be able to hear what's going on, because the acoustics are not exactly right.
We are definitely working with an amazing team on that, with the auditorium that will be created there, and the idea of doing projection on those mounds of sand.
I like that.
And a sound company that we're going to be working with, you know. And so these things we see they're done all over the world. We just too stuck sometimes with the one year I was in Avignon in the south of France, and I went to watch Antigone, Iphigenia, and Lysistrata in the middle of nowhere, in a quarry just outside of, and technology was there, and you sat there, you got everything, and there was singing in it. And so we just, you know, I've been toying with ideas of doing dance, and people arrive at the Joburg Theatre, get their tickets, get their glass of wine, but the dance is happening in the parking lot on minus three, and we put up, and you just make people experience the Joburg Theatre differently.
We've been speaking with James Bobo, Joburg City Theatre's Artistic Director. We'll be back again next week at this time for another program. Next week, I think we'll do politics and international relations or economics. We're going to alternate, lighter, heavier, and even the light stuff is going to be heavy. So we'll see you again next week at this time, this station. Thank you again.